Welcome to the Employment Law and HR Podcast with your host, Allison Colley.
Hello and welcome to this episode 146 of the Employment Law and HR Podcast. I'm your host, Allison Colley. I run the firm Real Employment Law Advice, where we provide advice and assistance to both employers and employees on all aspects of employment law and HR. For those of you who have been listening to the regular episodes, you'll know that I've been talking a lot about furloughing and the job retention scheme. And it certainly hasn't stopped. We're still getting calls and inquiries from both businesses and individuals about the scheme and their rights, and then the fallout from that. But fortunately, the portal for HMRC opened on the 20th of April, and hopefully there won't have been any further additions or guidance between then and this podcast coming out. Of course, if there is any further updates, you'll find them on our website, which is adviceforemployers.co.uk. And there's loads of information there, including frequently asked questions, some information for directors about furloughing, and also my take on the situation in relation to annual leave. But a bit of a break from furloughing and the furlough scheme with this episode of the podcast, I'm going to be talking to a HR professional from across the pond, if you like, over in the States. And it's been really interesting to talk to her about how things are going over there and how they're managing in relation to HR. So without further ado, I'm going to get into this week's featured content. I'm really pleased to be joined on today's podcast by Sarah Torres-Ferrick. Sarah is a human resource officer and creator of the Fun Feedback Framework. Sarah has worked for over a decade with executives at government agencies on growing and sustaining high-performing workforces. Now she uses these skills to bring effective human resource solutions to small businesses from her base in Virginia in the US. Sarah helps leaders to break through the complexities of having employees so they can advance their businesses with confidence. So welcome to the podcast, Sarah. I'd like to welcome Sarah onto the podcast today. Hi, Sarah. How are you?
Hi, Allison. Thanks for having me. I'm real excited to be here.
No, great. It's great to be speaking to you. And so you're based in Washington, aren't you?
I'm actually in Virginia, just south of Washington, D.C.
Okay. So it's a slightly different time there for you than it is for me. But it's great to be speaking to you. Do you want to just introduce yourself and explain a bit about your background for the listeners?
Oh, perfect. So I studied philosophy at school, and I couldn't really figure out how to make money philosophizing. So I kind of stumbled into HR because that's what my dad was doing. And I've been in HR for over 11 years. I really love the kind of problem solving and dealing with workplace issues aspects of it. About 2 years ago, I really learned that I loved helping small businesses. My husband's had a small business for about 10 years now, and I was kind of helping small businesses along the way and realizing that it brought me a lot of joy helping them because they're in positions where they can't always afford really top of the line, you know, HR, even employment law support. So I just love bringing those, you know, high-end things that I've spent 11 years doing, bringing it to those small businesses.
And did I read that you used to work for the military or the local government?
Yeah. So work different places within the Department of Defense on the civilian side.
Okay. I bet that was interesting.
Very, very fun. Yes.
Yeah. Lots of interesting characters, no doubt.
Yes. And there's a lot of unions in Department of Defense. So I enjoyed my time working with diverse unions.
Yeah. And so how has that helped you in terms of working with small businesses?
I think it helps because, you know, when you're that big machine, you have a lot more resources and you can tap into a lot of different people that can bring kind of innovation. And when you're a small business, you normally you can't really tap into those, you know, state-of-the-art thinkers, those best practices. So bringing all of that knowledge to the small businesses were great. And what the small businesses have over the, you know, those big machines is they're agile and they can move quickly. So I found that if we're giving small businesses those state-of-the-art HR tools, they're able to run with them a lot faster and you can just really see great improvements.
Yeah, absolutely. And so is that where you're currently sort of channeling your energies now for small businesses?
Yeah, so I kind of like to set them up for success. So I normally work with extremely small businesses. They've either just hired their first few employees or they're trying to figure out how to make that jump between, you know, it's me. Maybe every once in a while I, you know, hire a marketing person as a contractor. And how do I make that jump to having kind of an agency that I need to be kind of the CEO of? So I love helping them make that transition and then set themselves up for success so they can leave a, you know, high performing workforce.
And so what do you see as the biggest challenge for a small business owner then who moves into employing their first employee?
I think it's twofold. I think what they think their problem is money. They're kind of very scared about making the jump. And so working with them, working with their, you know, financial advisor to see, is it really helpful? Is it really doable is what they need. But what I think they, you know, actually need, because oftentimes what we think we need and what we actually need could be different. I think one of the biggest things that they do need is kind of that mindset shift. So oftentimes they're thinking, you know, this business is me. I'm the face of it. Only I can do things. And so they're doing every little thing in their business and then they're not understanding why they're not kind of growing. And they're thinking that, you know, they have the magic sauce and they can't duplicate that magic sauce. Or maybe somebody else has a different magic sauce that works really well with their magic sauce. So getting in them into the mindset to say, hey, you can reach your business goals in a different way besides you doing everything. You know, there's only a few hours in every day.
I resonate with that myself, actually, being a small business owner and having taken on my own employees. It took me a while, and I suppose it still is a work in progress. And obviously, I advise businesses all the time about their HR and employment. So actually, applying it yourself can be quite difficult.
I think it's always, like, even now when I'm, you know, talking to folks, I have to think, oh, am I thinking that there's a correction because it actually needs to be a correction? Or am I just like substituting the way I talk, the way I think for this person? And is that kind of hindering them being the best employee that they can be? So it's every day I think we get a little better at it.
So it sounds like you get involved in quite a bit of sort of the coaching of the small business owners as well as the HR, the sort of normal HR processes.
Oh, yeah, I think most definitely, you know, we sprinkle in that coaching with that, you know, these are the rules, let's follow them kind of thing.
And one of the things that I wanted to talk to you about was how you deal with change for small businesses. And in particular, you know, managing change with employees and motivating employees in really difficult times, because obviously, we're all being affected across the world in relation to the coronavirus, and that's having a huge impact on businesses and the relationships between businesses and their employees. So what are you doing with your business clients at the moment to help them to manage this sort of time?
Change is hard. And right now, the change is very stressful because it's getting to really foundational things for people. A lot of people are fearing that they're not going to have a job, they're going to have reduced hours, they're not going to be able to take care of themselves and their family. So this type of change is one of the hardest types of change that a business has to go through. It's even harder because a lot of times, you know, the business is making the choice to close or downsize. But here we kind of have outside entities and outside force that's telling us, you know, we can't be open for good reason, but it's still really hard. And so hopefully the business had already put in a lot of capital into kind of the trust bucket, because it's going to be trust and then communication that gets you through it. So anything you can do to, you know, foster and improve the trust your employees have in you is going to be helpful. And then making sure you're being transparent, you're communicating, you're bordering on over communicating, you're using different means to communicate to get to different types of people, you're allowing collaborative communication, And then you're really listening with an empathetic ear. You know, still you need to think about your business and your customers, but you also want to be empathetic to your employees.
Yeah, and that's really hard, isn't it? When lots of business owners are under a considerable amount of stress, not only for sort of maintaining their own families or running the business, looking at the books. So how do you help business owners to remain empathetic and to continue with all the good work in terms of communication and trust?
Well, I think first that business owner needs to have somebody they can confide in. And I recommend it's not kind of a spouse or a friend. That person's not going to just tell you what you need to hear to kind of feel better and move on with the scenario, but you have a coach, a mentor, an accountability partner, you know, a business kind of best friend. And these are the people that you're going to have those emotional hard conversations with, right? So these are the people that you can confide in and say, I really do think I need to have a layoff. I really do think I need to have a furlough. I really do think I need to reduce hours and kind of talk it out, because you can't have, as a business owner, you can't have those real emotional conversations directly with your employees. You have to, because your communication with your employees needs to be to help them get through it, not to help you get through it. So you need to make sure you have that outside person to help you get through it, because it is emotional, it is draining. And once you can get yourself in that space, that's when you can have the conversations. That there are going to be some conversations that are just being empathetic feeling, right? So that might be, you know, a weekly staff meeting, you know, small groups thing or one-on-one call where you're talking about how are things going? You know, how are you dealing with the schedule? How's life at home, you know, with your kids and your spouse there? And you can have those conversations and then hear what the employee is saying. And if the employee's coming back saying, you know, I'm struggling with having, you know, all the interruptions from my family, you can listen, you know, feel empathetic for them. Don't jump to, well, I'm not paying you to pay attention to your six-year-old, right? You don't want to jump there. You want to stop. Okay, well, how can I help them fix this work schedule? And then you can kind of go into solution mode.
Yeah, and it is really difficult, I have to say. Again, looking at it from my own perspective as an employer, you have to have a sort of a complete mindset shift, don't you? From, you know, what you're thinking about and how you are in the business, to then moving to talking to staff and employees, and really sort of as if taking one hat off and putting another on, and really sort of channeling yourself.
Exactly. And that's really difficult. And another hard part is remembering that when you're having that empathetic conversation, you're still having a business conversation about a business problem. So if I have this scenario where my employee's telling me that she's having a hard time, you know, moving to remote work because she's getting interruptions from her kids and her spouse, I don't want to jump into like marriage counselor mode where I'm, well, how are you communicating with your spouse? How can that be better? That's not what we're talking about here. I still want to have that business conversation about a business problem, right? So the business problem there is she can't concentrate on her work, so she's not getting these projects done. So I'm going to move the conversation not so much to how is she going to deal with her relationship with her spouse and how she sets up her kids, but how can we set up her work so her work is more effective? And through that conversation, we're going to stay in our professional lane, but we still might get to a conclusion of maybe a flexible work schedule that helps her. Maybe we give her some skills in time blocking, things like that, that are going to solve the problem, be empathetic, and still stay in our, you know, business lane.
Because it can be quite easy to start feeling overwhelmed and thinking, oh, well, I can't do anything about your children and I can't do anything about your husband. So it's remembering what you can control and influence, I guess, as the business owner.
Yeah, and you don't want to take that all in like that. That's too much of a load. You're going to need a whole, you know, team of therapists to help you if you're taking on all your stress and all your employees, right? Just try to remember, you know, you need to talk about a business solution to a business problem and kind of go from there.
And these kinds of conversations are hard enough to have when you're in sort of normal mode. Normal working mode, perhaps where you're seeing people, or even if they're working remotely, you have the opportunity to see them face to face more often and you're not so restricted. So how would you suggest business owners overcome the sort of distance and the fact that you are having to do this, you know, by telephone or, you know, Zoom or Skype or however, rather than, you know, having those face to face conversations?
Right. I think the more you can do video chat, the better. And then try to have kind of regular video chats one-on-one with your team, and then have group chats. And you want to think about, when you're looking at communication, three things. You want to make sure you're fostering communication, meaning your employee feels the communication with you, with, you know, her team, and with the business. She needs to feel connected to all three of those. And one thing I really like for fostering the team communication is when you have a team staff meeting, you have it like face-to-face, like virtually face-to-face, and then you can kind of open the room and then you come in late. So everybody kind of logs in, they're in on time, or maybe they're 5-10 minutes early. They can see each other and they can have that chit chat. You know, if you normally were in an office, your employees are used to walking by each other when they get up to get, you know, a drink, or when they're out to lunch, they're used to, you know, having chit chat by the water cooler at the elevator. They're used to chit chatting, you know, before meeting starts. So how can you put those little bits of chit chat in there? And I really like that idea, because they're going to, in that room, when you're just a couple minutes late, they're going to start talking to each other and say, how are you doing? How are you doing with this? That's going to get them in the mode. And then you want to have other tools after that, that they can continue to have casual conversations. So, you know, any type of like texting tool, a lot of people use Slack or even Voxer, it's more video, but casual ways for them to communicate with each other will be kind of tremendous. And I think if you're looking at one of the ways of communication to focus on, having your employee feel connected to her team is probably the most important, because that's going to really help with the productivity. Because if they're feeling kind of behind, or they're feeling like the remote work change isn't working for them, they probably will feel more comfortable going to their peer for help than to coming to you, if that's going to admit they're kind of not meeting an expectation or something. So that group team environment is really going to get us through change.
Yeah, I really like that idea, actually, of the opening up the room or the conversation or however before you arrive. Because often, you know, I've been using Zoom quite a bit and I've been setting it up with a waiting room. So then, you know, you as the meeting organizer let everyone in, but actually using the setting which says you can just join without the meeting organizer is a fantastic idea. And like you say, just to recreate that kind of conversation, the chit chat that happens in the scenarios within the office or at meetings before you arrive. So yeah, fantastic tip there. The other thing I wanted to ask you, and going back to what you were saying earlier about how you're managing change and motivating staff, and you talked about the trust bucket and fostering trust and improving communication and being transparent. So how are you suggesting employers do that, in addition to what they should already be doing before the sort of situation we're in now?
Yeah, so especially if you're moving to remote work and you're not used to it, it can be really easy to diminish trust, because you as a business owner might not really like remote work, or you might not understand it, and you might have to have a mind shift with, I'm not paying this person to go to work, as in go to a building, sit in a desk. You know, depending on what type of employee you are, I might not be paying you for specific hours of work. You know, for most of the clients I work with, you know, they're not paid hourly, they're paid salary. So they're paying them for outcomes. So when you go to remote work and you have this type of employee, but then you start doing things like checking in on them every hour because you just have to know that they're still working, or making them write detailed descriptions about what they're going to accomplish in the morning and then what they accomplish in the afternoon. If these things you didn't do when they were in the office, that's going to hurt your trust because your employee is going to think that you don't trust them when you can't see them, right? And you might be thinking, well, Sarah, I don't want to pay my employee to do the laundry. I don't want to pay my employee, you know, to sip a beverage on the porch. You know, I'm paying her to sit at her desk and do her work. And the thing is, you know, you're right. You're paying them to do their job. You're not paying them to do housework or to read a book or play with their family. But it's going to be better for you to find other ways to check their performance. And this is really when you need to kind of double down on your performance plan and your performance program, because it's those setting clear expectations and then holding them accountable where you're going to feel secure that they're doing what you're paying them to do without jeopardizing your trust. Because you don't want your employees to feel like you don't think that they're working when you can't see them.
And there are so many, well, the one thing I'm thinking, I'm hoping that this whole coronavirus situation brings out is more homeworking and more trust, putting more responsibility onto employees. Because as you say, lots of employers do have this sort of old fashioned view that if you're in the office, then you're productive. And if you're at home, you're not. When actually, a lot of the time, it could be quite the opposite.
Yeah, I think so. And I think a lot of people, and you employees, you'll have to manage this because you don't want to burn your employees out. They probably feel stressed that they're not getting enough work done. But I think if they really looked at what they did when they're in the office and they're taking out all the downtime that happens in an office, they're doing more work and they're probably having more focused concentration time. So as long as you are still getting the deliverables that you need, as long as things aren't falling through the cracks, you know, I challenge business owners to kind of step back from those, you know, thoughts that they have about, I need to track minute by minute, hour by hour. I need to know exactly what they're doing. I need to make sure that they didn't run down and change a load of laundry. Well, did you really care when they, you know, went down a couple floors in the building, you know, to get, you know, a Danish and a tea? No, you didn't. So why do you care that they took 5 minutes to change? And so thinking like that and being flexible is really going to help, not just for remote work in general. Well, I agree. I wish that one thing I hope that comes out of this is improvement in the workplace. But also when we're dealing with change, you have to be very cognizant of that trust factor. Because if employees don't feel trusted, they're already having heightened emotions because of where we are, you're not going to have an engaged and productive workforce.
And then on the other side of things, thinking about the trust and communication and transparency, how does an employer ensure that their employees trust them and continue to have that element of trust that the employer is doing the right thing by them when, you know, things are so uncertain and you aren't seeing everybody all the time? You know, how does an employer, on the flip side of it, ensure that the employee still maintains that trust in them?
Right. So generally speaking, an easy way to build trust is to talk about mistakes. So, you know, as a leader, every time I make a mistake, I kind of do a little happy dance because I probably made a mistake that's going to help me. You know, some mistakes are needed to advance, but I also now have an opportunity to show vulnerability and show my team what it means, right? So when I make a mistake, I make it big, I communicate it big. I make sure that everybody knows that I made the mistake and this is what we're doing about it. This is a mistake that's going to push us forward because of XYZ. This is a mistake that means I need to change something. So that is a general kind of tactic that you can use. Whenever you make a mistake, make sure you're communicating it to your team in a way that makes everybody feel like they can be vulnerable too, which will build a connection. When we're talking in this specific time, make sure you're being transparent, right? Don't tell your employees everything's going to be okay and then turn around and talk to your, you know, CFO about possible layoffs, possible furlough, possible reduction in hours. That's not true. If it comes out, you know, 3 months from now, 3 weeks from now, that you're going to have to do something drastic like that, every employee, even the ones that stay, that aren't affected, are going to remember that you told them it was going to be okay and it wasn't okay for everyone. So you need to be transparent. If you don't know the answer, say you don't know the answer. I would say you can practice what you're going to say, because sometimes we say things like it's going to be okay because we hope that it's going to be okay. We're not lying. That's what we hope for, but that's not something that we should kind of say, you know. And I watched this in a TV show, and it was about a chief of police. And, you know, there was one of the police officers allegedly did something bad and somebody got hurt. So her attorney says, don't say you're sorry. And she said she was sorry, because she's like, obviously, I'm sorry. Somebody got hurt. And then the entire episode, it kept on going back in her face, right? The other police officer said, you don't have us our back because you said you're sorry. The lawyer says there's going to be these lawsuits because you admitted guilt because you said you're sorry. So things that you say because you're a good person might not be the best things to say as the business owner. So talk to your advisors, practice, make sure that, you know, others will perceive what you're saying the way that you need to, because it's important that you're transparent and everything that you say is completely accurate, and it's going to stay accurate for the near future.
Yeah. And what do you think about business owners who hide behind HR? Do you find that fairly often? Do you find people try to get you to deliver the messages?
Oh, all the time. And I think the CEO is the head of HR, right? Your HR person, me, your HR lady, I'm not your head of HR. You're the head of HR because you're the leader. You know, I can help you. I can be that leadership coach for you, but that's your job. And so the worst thing that you can do, and I've seen this so many times, like say somebody needs to be disciplined, somebody needs to be let go, the manager hands them a packet of papers and said, HR made me do it. You know, Sarah in HR, she made me do this. No, HR doesn't make the decisions for you. You know, just like your CFO is not telling you how to spend your money, your attorney's not telling you what you need to do. We're all advising you. It's you as the business owner that have to make the decision, and you have to communicate it. Because I'm telling you, if you want your employees to trust you, you need to be the one to say it. And saying hard things in motivating people to stay strong and work through crises like we're in now, it's much easier for them to buy into what the CEO is saying, the face of the company is saying, the person that signs the check is saying, rather than what HR is saying.
And it is a really tough job being a business owner, being an employer, and being the face of the business in front of employees in difficult times. And it's so much easier to hide behind HR. And I see it quite a lot, and see the negative impact that has. So absolutely, having someone like yourself on hand to, like you say, coach them through it and give them the tools to be able to build that trust and confidence in their staff and deliver those messages is really important. So I just want to move on, Sarah, from talking about how you deal with the sort of change in things, whilst I've got you on the podcast, to ask a bit about what's happening in the States in relation to employment, and how you know your government have responded, or I know lots of it's state by state, isn't it, to the sort of coronavirus situation. You may have heard here in the UK that the government introduced a scheme called the Job Retention Scheme, where employers can furlough their staff and claim 80% of the pay. And I just wondered if there's anything equivalent there.
Yeah, we are kind of working through that. And most of it is coming from the federal level. And they do say that they're going to offer more. But the first batches were really focused, or they were intended to focus on small business. The first was unemployment. So we have businesses pay unemployment insurance for their employees. So if you're a small business owner and say you're not paying yourself on payroll, then you probably wouldn't qualify for unemployment. Or in some states, you never would qualify for unemployment. Your employees might, but you wouldn't, even though the state made you shut your doors because you're not an essential business. So the first law said, okay, I'm going to open you up to get unemployment, you know, business owners. And then for your employees, they can get more unemployment than they normally would have gotten. They also offered two different kinds of loans. There's a loan that you would get from our small business. We have like a small business agency on the federal level. Mm-hmm. And this loan, you could get a $10,000 advance that you didn't have to pay back even if you were denied the loan. But the loan or part of it would be forgiven if it was used for like rent and utilities for your business or for payroll, because the government wanted to see was us to take people off of being laid off or being furloughed, bring them back to work, some kind of work, and then they would rather give the incentive for the business than, you know, all that unemployment. And then the second type of loan is really a pay loan. So it's a loan you would get from a bank, and it's basically to get people back from furlough or back from layoff. And then you would get all that money back if you paid it for wages. In addition to wages, you could get it for any health care money you put in. Okay. So oftentimes the company's offering healthcare, and if it costs $100, they might pay $60, and then the employee pays $40. You would still get that $60 back under the program.
Okay. And how's that impacting on your clients, the people that you work with regularly?
Well, it's been really hard for small businesses because they don't have an in-house counsel. They don't have an in-house, you know, accountant. In-house HR, that's really helping them prepare. So they are taking a little longer to get everything prepared because it's a lot to apply for these. What we're finding out now is some of the bigger corporations, that even corporations that were publicly traded, because they divided their corporation, they were able to claim that each entity within their corporation was a small business. But because they were part of this big machine with all these resources, they were able to put their applications in very quickly. So it's looking like a lot of the money, because it's not a finite amount of money, you know, everybody doesn't get it. It's first come, first serve. It's looking like now when the data is coming out that a lot of these big businesses that divided themselves up got the money rather than, you know, the tea shop at the corner or the mom and pop gym or the, you know, local restaurant. Those folks might not have done it just because they couldn't get their paperwork in order. There was a lot of like legal and financial paperwork they had to get together. They couldn't move fast as the big machines.
That's such a shame, isn't it? So are there any measures being taken now to help improve that for those small businesses, or are they just going to have to sort of get by?
Well, the legislature, so the Senate and the House part of the government, they're looking to add different measures. And then what's a little unique is they make the law, but then it's the administration that has to implement it. And if they disagree with how the administration's implementing it, they have to go back and make a law. So it's a little slow going, which is why we're getting things in segments. So hopefully in the next segment, we can see something for truly those small mom and pop type businesses.
No, that's good. Well, hopefully there is something for them. So what are the number one sort of tips and things you're telling your clients about at the moment to help see them through this situation from a HR perspective?
So I think from the business as a whole, to look at the finances, the structure, what you're offering, and from the HR perspective on that, really having that conversation about how long can I last with my workforce? Do I need to make changes? And not putting off the question about layoffs and furloughs or reduction of hours. Have that thought process now. I want them to be able to say, hey, I can, if we're staying closed, this is the work that I have that can be done remotely. This work can't. This is the money I'm projecting having come in. I can last 3 weeks like this. I can last 6 months like this. And then after that, we're going to have to make a change. I want them to know that on the front end. And then with leading their teams, just really think about trust, communication, and then structure. So structure is really when we're moving our employees to a different way of doing business. It might be that they're moving to remote work. It might be that we had to, you know, say you have an essential business, you have to be open, and then you have to change the way you're doing business, different practices. You know, in the States, there's a lot of companies taking temperatures, having questionnaires before employees can come in. All that is a big change. So what structure are you putting in to help your employees be successful in this new model, and then continually check in with them because the right structure might be a little different for everyone. So how can you help them set up themselves to be more the best they can be in this scenario?
No, absolutely. That's really good tips there. And so I just want to sort of finalize and wrap things up really with you by asking you, obviously being in HR is a pretty stressful job, and you do end up taking on the responsibilities and stress of your clients and other businesses, no matter how hard you try. So what are your top tips for relaxing and de-stressing? What do you do, and what do you recommend to people?
I think being strict on my time has been the most helpful for me. So I have, these are the hours that I work. This is when I do things. Because in HR, there are some things that are really emergencies, and I'll kind of step out of that. But a lot of times it might just feel like I need to get it done right now. But you can feel like all you're doing is chasing fires and you're never making moves. So I really do practice kind of strict adherence to, you know, my time schedule. When I'm feeling really stressed, or when I'm in an environment where there's a lot to do, it seems like there's a lot of fires that are coming up, then I try to do time blocking, where I have the specific tasks that I need to accomplish, what are their priorities, and then actually scheduling them in. So in addition to scheduling in my meetings, I'm scheduling when I'm going to accomplish certain things. And then I'm scheduling in, you know, my downtime, the what makes me relax, schedule that in, scheduling my family time. I find that really, really helpful. Otherwise, I just, you know, get caught up in doing work, doing work, doing work, and I'll never stop, especially if I'm home all day now. It's just down the hall.
Yeah. So do you normally work from home, or do you go to an office to work on a regular basis?
Normally, most of my day is in an office outside of the house.
You're also adapting to new ways of working and the new norm, if you like.
That's right.
Okay. And then finally, just before we go, can you just let everybody know how they can find out more about you if anybody wants to get in touch? Where's the best place to contact you?
Well, I'd love to connect on LinkedIn, Sarah Torres-Ferrick. That's a little hard to remember how to spell that, especially if you're listening to this. So it's easy to go to hrcircleonline.com, then you can connect with me there.
Great stuff. And it's been really fantastic to talk to you and to hear a bit about what's happening, obviously in a different country, but a different perspective, and knowing that actually all the same rules and processes and best practice applies wherever you are, really, whatever the jurisdiction. It's all about trust and communication and being a good person, really.
Agreed, yes.
Okay, so thanks very much. What I'll do is I'll put all of Sarah's details into the show notes so you can find them there. And do go over and connect with Sarah on LinkedIn. I've already connected with you, Sarah, and seen some of your articles and content. So I'd definitely recommend that. So thanks very much for being on the podcast today. And do take care, and I hope things improve for you over there soon.
Oh, thanks, Alison.
It was really great to talk to Sarah about what is happening in the States in relation to the situation in relation to the coronavirus, and how they're managing dealing with employees remotely and maintaining those relationships. And as I said at the end, it just goes to show that managing people is the same regardless of the jurisdiction and the law involved. It's all about being transparent, communicating, building trust, and being empathetic. So we all have those skills. We all have that available to us. So there's no reason why we can't be great employers wherever we're based. If you have any questions about what we've discussed in today's episode of the podcast, or you would like some information about Sarah, or you want to find out how to make your business better through your people, then do not hesitate to get in touch with me. My email address is alison@realemploymentlawadvice.co.uk, and you can find all the details about today's podcast in the show notes, which are on the website, which is adviceforemployers.co.uk/podcast/146. I look forward to speaking to you again in 2 weeks, and do stay safe. Thanks again for listening. Just want to finalise by saying I wouldn't be a lawyer unless I had a legal disclaimer. So I must just say to you that the information in this podcast is for information only. It's general review and a general update. It's always necessary to get specific legal advice about your circumstances. So please don't rely on anything that you've heard in this podcast. But please do feel free to contact me if you'd like further information or specific advice.